from Relay FM. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of streaming media. This is episode number 74, recorded July the 17th, 2024. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and with me for this very special Sports Corner edition is my guest. He is the injury expert. He is the author of Under the Knife on Substack. He is the author of the book, The Science of Baseball. Oh my goodness. I've known him a very long time. It's great to be on a podcast with him. It's Will Carroll. Will, welcome to Downstream.
It's been a long time, Jason. I follow your work. I, of course, love Six Colors and all the things you do over there, plus the podcasts. I don't know how you keep up with all of it. I honestly don't.
It's a lot. I don't know either. I keep asking myself that question. Yeah, and I'm a big sports fan. I enjoy reading Under the Knife. We met when I was in Indianapolis for a conference or something at one point.
I think you were speaking to teachers.
Yeah, that was an odd one that came out of the blue where they saw a column I wrote in Macworld and wanted me to write about it. It was do a speech version of what I wrote about in Macworld. Very strange, but it was nice because I got a trip to Indianapolis out of it and I got to meet you. You, of course, were one of the early writers at Baseball Prospectus as well, a legendary group of people who have gone on to do all sorts of interesting things. And I read you back then, at BP back in the day.
We actually just had the first group where all the founders got together. I was moderating it.
I saw the pictures.
So many of the early guys were there. It was at Sabre back in March. A number of our guys came in. James Click, who was one of the early writers, went on to become the Astros GM.
Right.
Has the ring now. Uh-huh. Nate Silver, he used to write at Baseball Prospectus. I don't know whatever happened to him. I'm sure he's doing well.
My local newspaper sports editor, Christina Carl, of course.
Christina Carl was there. She's one of the founders, one of the pioneers of the industry.
Yeah. So thank you for being here. Thank you for slumming it over here. You had a 5x5 podcast for a brief time too, called The Nickel.
I did. I tried to get the sports thing to work and it didn't, but it was fun.
One of the best intros ever.
That was great.
Because
Michael Grady now is the Minnesota Timberwolves play-by-play guy.
Wow.
So if you liked his voice then, he's even better
now. It was just that deeply resonant PA announcer. It was very much like you were walking out onto the court at the beginning of an NBA.
That's how I felt. Yeah. I hated that the podcast kind of didn't catch on, but because the intro, I just couldn't follow the intro is what it was.
That intro was amazing. It really was. This is also, before we start the actual show, I'm gonna also say you interviewed Mike Schur back before anybody knew that Ken Tremendous was a TV writer, right? I think I remember walking up to 2nd Street in San Francisco listening to your interview with him when he was just a shadowy figure who did a sports blog and nobody knew he was actually one of the writers on The Office while you interviewed him.
Yeah, I did. I had pieced things together. One of my kind of hobbies has always been figuring out who people are. I don't know if you know Ken Arneson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's done a lot of things.
Yeah, my friend Phil Michaels did the A's blog with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was the sports bard. He would post these poems about baseball. We figured out who he was. There's someone that uses a moniker. He tries to stay anonymous, yet is very public. And I'm one of very few people that's ever run down his real name. Mm. So I can't name who it is because he's exceptionally powerful, but it's fun. So yeah,
fun.
Mike was great. And him and Joe Posnanski, they do a great podcast.
They do a great podcast. But I always think about the fact that I first heard his voice as the shadowy figure. Fire Joe Morgan was my favorite blog of all time. And to find out that they were all professional comedy writers, it was that moment where you're thinking, how are these people so funny? These random people, it turns out, no, it's because they're professional comedy writers. That's why they're so funny.
One of my favorite stories that I can tell now is that Fire Joe Morgan, one of the regular readers, was Joe Morgan.
Oh, oof. Ouch. They didn't really go for Joe Morgan, though, most of the time, at least.
No, it branched out. It started that way.
Yeah, it did.
But Joe would regularly, Joe read Baseball Prospectus. He was, of course, I can say now that he's passed that he was one of my main sources on the Pete Rose story.
Wow.
And I wouldn't say we're friends, but we talked regularly and he would mention Fire Joe Morgan. He thought it was kind of funny.
Was his negativity about sabermetrics and analytics and all of that on Sunday Night Baseball a little bit pundity, or did he really believe that? I have a hard time believing he could read all that stuff and think it was all just completely bogus.
No, it was just, he was so old school. Yeah. He was so pro player that he got more curious as time went on. I mean, if you go back to Baseball Prospectus in the very early days, even before I got there, they were exceptionally negative on Peter Gammons. And I wouldn't have a career without Peter Gammons. But he like came around and they came around on him, and it kind of started to rub off. And Joe was just so pro player. Yeah. He thought only players could understand it. Only players should talk about it. But he sort of came around.
I get it. I mean, ironically, of course, using sabermetrics analysis, it exposed just how brilliant a player he was. It made him look better.
That's a thing. Amazingly, you know, if I'm sure if Mike were starting it today, it'd be Fire John Smoltz, because he does the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But I won't go
into also
that.
Also a kind of a lemon faced lack of joy about the sport you're supposed to be covering. I think that was my thing. I mean, we had Joe Morgan here in the Bay Area for ages. He's the one who did the he was the one who basically at one point Dwayne Kuiper, the longtime play by play TV analyst for the Giants, was the color commentator aside play-by-play Joe Morgan on Giants Vision, the pay cable. We're going to talk later, because this is going somewhere, I swear, about regional sports networks. And it's kind of funny how the, at least here in the Bay Area and in Northern California, that's how those guys started, was on the Giants' effort to build a premium cable channel that you had to pay extra for. It wasn't a regional sports network as we think of it now. It was more like HBO. In order to see most televised Giants games. That's how they did it, Giants Vision. Things have come a long way. All right, well, let's dive in. That was really fun. I didn't think we were going to talk about Ken Tremendous, but I do love Mike Schur, and I flashed on that. I have a positional memory when it comes to podcasts, so I can literally see myself walking up Second Street listening to that on my iPod back in the day. So good times. All right, we should talk about the NBA. NBA TV deal, which this podcast has been covering for a long time because it's sort of been floating out there, has been finalized, although it hasn't been officially approved, which will start a 5-day clock that will allow David Zaslav and Warner Brothers Discovery, so TNT essentially, to try and match one of the deals. The rumor is that they're going to try to match actually this new C package, which is an Amazon Prime Video deal that the NBA made. The question is, can they really do it? And that may be are they going to try, or are they just sort of face saving here? It's a little bit unclear, but the big picture is 11 years, $76 billion. It's way more, I think, than anybody really anticipated these sports rights going for. Everybody was waiting for the big hit to be taken, or a very small increase. It's actually a large increase, which I think says something about perception about the value of sports on TV, whether it's broadcast or streaming or cable. And then just a little ancillary thing that was reported today by The Athletic, the WNBA is a part of this deal, $2.2 billion over 11 years with the option for even more potentially. That is a 4x increase. So thank you, especially Caitlin Clark, but really everybody in the WNBA product for that, and the rise of women's sports in general. So we don't know ultimately whether TNT is going to find a way to be relevant here, or whether Zaslav is already written it off and just doesn't, you know, wants to be a little bit more of a victim here than anything else, or if he's really going to try to wrestle NBC's package or Amazon's package away from them. But other than John Tesh, who is absolutely a winner because that theme song is coming back on the NBA on NBC, what do you think about how the NBA deal played out?
Well, for the NBA, this is great. This is a absolute no lose for them. They get a ton more money. They get a ton more attention. They get more networks. The only negative I see of that is that now you've got to think about it. You're like, well, it's Thursday, so I've got to go to Amazon, and it's Sunday, so I've got to go here. Baseball's kind of in that place now where you've got to think about, you know, it's Sunday morning. Where am I watching a show? We've got to get to a point where you just, you know, I can say into my Xfinity remote, you know, NBC, and it just goes to NBC. I need that for baseball, and you can't because it goes across streaming and everything else. Somebody's got to figure that out. For Warner Brothers Discovery, I think this is existential because they just got hit with that big analyst report saying they needed to spin everything off. They need to, you know, basically spin off the debt. Might be nice. I'd like to clone myself and give the other guy all that student
loan. Isn't that great? Boy, I hate that guy. That poor guy.
Yeah. But the question is, what does he believe about linear TV? Does he believe there's a future in it? And if so, TNT, even in a short-term deal, would be interesting because, you know, Charles Barkley and the Inside the NBA is probably, you know, to me, the most entertaining studio show that's ever existed. And it's largely Barkley, who now says he's going to retire. Well, if they retain it, does he rethink that?
I don't believe it.
I got to think so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Charles is Charles and Shaq is Shaq. And the fun part for me is that neither of them need to do it, which gives them freedom to say anything they want. You know, if they got fired tomorrow, they're fine. I mean, even Charles can't lose that much in golf. So it's one of those things where I think we're going to find out really quickly where Warner Brothers Discovery is going to go. Because if they believe at all in these linear stations, then they have to have sports.
Yeah.
You know, there's just nothing else they can go get. The MLS is locked up. The NFL is locked up. Major League Baseball is mostly locked up. We'll talk about that later. But there's just nothing else out there for them to go and do unless they're going to create something. And even that has been so difficult. You know, everybody's trying to make fetch happen with pickleball TV. Nobody wants to watch pickleball TV. Just, you don't. Nobody watches tennis, and that's super athletic. Let's watch seniors tennis is basically what it become. The only interesting package out there besides that would be Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy's Golf Simulator League, which I'm actually a little bit excited about. I don't like golf. I hate golf. I stink at golf. It's fine if everybody likes golf. But on TV, it's kind of boring unless it's a major and it's close. I'm one of those people that's like, oh, Tiger's within two strokes. I'll watch the Open. This simulator kind of feels like where golf is going. And it's faster paced. You'll be able to have more people. You don't have to watch them. You know, now Tiger is walking, 200 yards to the next shot. Let's go over here. Let's go over here. I'm a little excited about that. But for Warner Brothers Discovery, this is going to tell us about a whole lot more than sports.
Yeah. For people who don't know, I know we've mentioned it on this podcast before. One of the challenges is cable companies pay per subscriber for the WBD cable package, which is basically the Turner package, and it's TBS and TNT and Headline News and True TV and CNN. And as a Fubo TV subscriber myself, I actually don't get those channels, although I do get them. I can get the sports through the Bleacher Report add-on to Max, which is, again, so it's not just a cable play here, it's also a streaming play. But the thing is, all those cable companies, it's going to be a lot easier if the NBA isn't there. For yeah. Comcast or Charter or any other or Dish Network or DirecTV to look at that package and say, no, we're not going to pay you, or we're not going to pay you as much, or we're going to put you on a different tier. And that would be catastrophic to the finances of Warner Brothers Discovery. So they need to, even though we roll our eyes maybe a little bit, especially at this podcast, because we're about streaming at linear TV and cable TV, it's a revenue source, and they've got to kind of put up enough content for it to be worth it for the cable companies to compensate them. And that's a huge risk here is that, I mean, I know they've got baseball playoffs on TBS, and they've got some college football and some college basketball, but very little. The marquee is the NBA on TNT. And if they lose that, it's a huge risk. And it sounds like unless they can match that Amazon deal, it's still going to be a problem. And I'm unclear on whether matching, nobody knows what matching really means. But yeah. One of the things that it might mean is Amazon is presumably doing a streaming only deal, which is interesting because if they say, well, we're going to simulcast it on TNT, the answer might be you can't. That's not matching. At which point they've got a Max thing, which is might not be the end of the world to have NBA on Max and have the studio show on Max and all of that. But they're going to lose everybody who's, again, everybody who's in a traditional cable audience.
The other thing to remember here is that venue sports is coming.
Spulu, yes.
Discovery. Yeah. it's no one has been able to make this make sense to me. But what else does Discovery have to put into that pot?
Yeah.
You know, Fox has the NFL, ESPN has everything. I don't know why ESPN is in it when ESPN is launching ESPN Plus. It's just such a confusing landscape right now.
Yeah, it is. I wonder if Venu Sports' goal ultimately is to be the place that you described, which is, I just want to see the NBA game. And if you pay the right package, you've got all the right packages sort of fitting together. But I also think that the ESPN over the top service next year is going to have that same goal, to be an aggregator of all sports content. And so if you want to, throw in Bleacher Report TV, we'll sell that to you too.
Yeah.
And pay them and put it in our interface. And so I don't know, is a Venu going to be super redundant or not, but it's going to be fascinating to see also, because this is a, Zaslav, we don't know what he's thinking, but this is a traditional entertainment company, Warner Brothers Discovery, mm-hmm. versus Amazon. And that's fascinating. That dynamic is fascinating because this is a match my contract situation with a company whose priorities and business model do not remotely align with a company that's trying to match them. And so I don't know if they are going to be able to, but it will be fun to watch it.
It will. I think when you talk about trying to fit all the parts together and have a single offering, the one that could have done this would be the NBA itself. The MLS has shown with its Apple deal that it's very easy to do if you can collect all those rights. The other thing is, yes, everything's in such motion. I don't know how you do it. You know, if you're trying to collect all the NFL, you would need YouTube, you would need Paramount or Skydance or whatever it's going to be, Skymount. You would need so many different things, plus ESPN and NBC. I don't think it's possible unless, you know, we see a complete hands-off from the FTC on consolidation, which is simply not going to happen.
And in many ways, those rights are being purchased to differentiate themselves from their competitors, which means putting them together in a package is a kind of against the business model. I think somebody will do it, and it might even be Venu, it might be ESPN. I think that will happen. Amazon may aggregate it, Apple may aggregate it, but in the end, everybody's going to go, yay, and then they're going to see the bill, and it's going to be like $100 a month, and they're going to go, wait a second, what am I paying for here? And the answer is, that's what it's going to cost to aggregate all that stuff together.
I think Amazon will do it for baseball. I think we'll talk about the RSNs in a bit, but when you see those RSNs kind of fading away, they're already doing it with the Padres. They've got, I think they announced it was 40,000 people have subscribed.
Right.
And that's not a cheap subscription for just the Padres.
Right.
If you could get
that's
every
streaming.
Team.
They're also on cable, right? They're also on cable in San Diego, so they're getting money from the cable company. But it's also been 40,000 over the top for the Padres in the San Diego area. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good. It surprised me. But I think, you know, the dream of MLB TV and NBA TV and all the others is to have that one place, which is, you know, we've seen the MLS do it. And Apple has absolutely killed it with their coverage and all the surrounding things and the promotion. I can't think they went into this expecting Leo Messi was going to drive this thing. But holy cow, it's the best thing since the iPod.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Okay, let's move on and talk about the NFL a little bit. The Sunday Ticket lawsuit. Everybody who remembers sports in the 80s, 90s, 80s, I guess, remembers the strange constitutional principle that antitrust verdicts are trebled because, of course, famously, a jury thinking that they could change it later, which was wrong, ruled for the USFL over the NFL in their antitrust suit. Awarded them $1, trebled to $3. The USFL went out of business. But this is not $1. The NFL has lost again in an antitrust case. And this one is for $4.7 billion. And that's before you treble it to $14.1 billion. All about NFL Sunday Ticket. I promised in the last episode we would talk about this a little more this week since it's Sports Corner. I don't know what to think. I'm curious what you think about this. Like, I part of me thinks never bet against the NFL because the NFL is such a huge force and they always seem to win. At the same time, it's hard not to look at this and say, but it is antitrust and it is price fixing and they did overprice this and binding all the rights together and not offering them in any other method is something that's probably illegal. not a lawyer, but like I have that moment of like, just because it's been done before, it doesn't mean when you look at it, it doesn't look like it can't be possibly be legal. And what does that mean for the NFL's entire TV strategy?
Exactly. You know, if I were YouTube, having just paid all this money to have exactly what they just got sued for, I'd worry a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm the NFL, $14 billion, if they actually have to pay this, would be more than a year of their TV money.
Yeah.
And one of the things you have to understand about the NFL is that the NFL as an entity really doesn't exist. You know, Roger Goodell gets paid a salary and there's a staff that does a lot of things, but it's not really a company. It's more of a pass-through entity. You know, all the money theoretically, absent, you know, Goodell's $50 million salary, passes through to the owners. So the owners are going to have to split this 32 ways.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to take a hard look at this. You know, it's going to take a couple of years to deal with appeals. They're going to have to figure out which judges they're going to see, which district. The district has been fairly restrictive since it's been handled mostly out of Minnesota since the 90s. I forget why it was Minnesota. I think it's probably going to come down. I don't think that'll be it. But the easy answer for the NFL is going to be, you know, they'll take some slap on the wrist. They'll make some changes to Sunday Ticket. Their argument was, you know, it's worth what it's worth in the marketplace. I get that, but you're the NFL. We saw that with the USFL. We saw that with the XFL. We saw that with the new USFL. We're seeing that with whatever the heck The Rock is calling his league this week. So it's one of those where the NFL is the big daddy. I think the easy answer to this, besides, you know, making the tweaks the law requires and paying a big check, is expansion. I think the easy way for the NFL to do this is to split the pie again, and an expansion fee for an NFL franchise would be $1 billion. Easy.
At least.
And I can see it being $2 billion. Yeah. So if they do that, they do four teams. There's no way we couldn't absorb four more teams. I don't know exactly where you put them. you might start London. With Oakland. London is going to be one of them.
London, Oakland.
You
got to
think about Mexico. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those situations where I think the NFL will end up taking care of itself. But the amazing thing to me about this whole lawsuit is, you know, they had to go on the record. They had to have owners testify.
Yeah.
They had Goodell on the stand. They had exhibits. And did ESPN cover it once? I think they briefly discussed the verdict. I'm just stunned how much water the partners carried, because that's how valuable the NFL is to all of them. There was, outside of even the niche sports sites, there was very little coverage of this.
Yeah, it's for people who are not in the United States, I always have to do this because podcasts have an international audience and people are like, oh, you're talking about the NFL. It's like, one thing that I've said repeatedly, I'll say again, last year's highest TV ratings, 92 of the 100 or something, 95 of the 100 were NFL games. And other than, I think, the Oscars, the rest were college football. Football is king in the United States, and football on TV is king. And the NFL really is king. That is the truth of it. And they are incredibly powerful. And so that does make me wonder, part of me, like, this is also coming up with college football, with consolidation and the increased professionalizing of college football, and the question about there is a law on the books with some very specific suggestions about when the NFL can broadcast, when college football can broadcast, and that it allows a certain amount of pooling of TV rights. And recently, with the professionalization of college, there's been a question of, does that law really apply to streaming? Even does it apply to cable, but certainly does it apply to streaming? And I wonder if the acceleration of the NFL, the acceleration of streaming, and this rapid acceleration and professionalization of college football is leading to a point where something will happen. We don't, politically in the United States, we don't know what's going to happen. But regardless of whether the Democrats or Republicans are in the White House next year, I would say I start to wonder, because the NFL and football in general is so America, apple pie, if the end result might be legislation that essentially allows leagues and conferences to have complete control over their TV rights instead of it being, because theoretically this is collusion, right? Theoretically, mm-hmm. it's illegal yeah. for these different entities, other than the MLB antitrust exception. And then there's one law that's sort of like, well, football will stay off Saturdays in this time of the year and all of that. And I do wonder, because in the end, if it's going to cost the NFL, the golden child of the United States, $14 billion, there's probably a lot of lobbying to be done to say, can we make this legal so that this isn't a problem? Yeah. Because I do think that that as the SEC and the Big Ten rise and become essentially another NFL, that there are going to be questions about their TV rights. People are already talking about, like, well, should they pool their rights and have multiple partners like the NFL? Because the NFL has got everybody's yeah. a partner. So everybody, like you said, everybody is a partner of the NFL. Makes it hard to be critical of the NFL. But I do wonder if there's a legislative answer coming that gives them, that gets them off the hook, because there's so much money at stake here.
I'm going to say no, because it's so difficult. You know, it is tough to go against your local college or colleges in most states, and the NFL if you have it in your state. It'd be easier if you're if Rand Paul decides he wants to go against the NFL.
Right.
Well, you know, that's Louisville's not going
to
have a team.
But that's what I'm saying is, what if it's the Congress to the rescue saying, oh no, the NFL, we're going to make it clear that all of the things that the NFL and the other sports leagues are doing and college football is doing is legal, and you can't take them to court and say they can't collude. It's like the antitrust exemption for Major League Baseball. Now, however, politicians really like lording it over baseball and its antitrust exemption. So giving them a free ride might have some political fallback, but it's also a bunch of billionaires who are the friends of the people in power. So I don't know.
It's who donated to who, how many free tickets did they get? The other thing to keep in mind is Donald Trump hates the NFL. You know, we spoke about that
USFL
suit.
Yes.
And he was denied even the chance to bid on the Buffalo Bills. They selected John Bon Jovi as the better bidder. He ended up not winning. But when they cut down the bids, I think from 5 to 3, Trump was pushed aside, and that's got to burn.
Right.
You know, if you're a so-called billionaire and John Bon Jovi's a better bidder than you, that's intriguing. But the thing I think is going to happen here is, I don't think legislation will happen. I think what will happen is college will take care of itself. I think it will professionalize almost completely. They'll own Saturday. They'll be able to consolidate. We saw, the Pac-12 break up. Well, all but two.
Yep.
Joke. But
Stanford
and your beloved Cal is now
Atlantic Coast Conference.
Atlantic Coast, yeah, which sure. makes no sense.
Yeah, sure.
And now the Atlantic Coast Conference is probably going to lose Florida State and Clemson, which are their two main things. Yep. If that happens, then what you have is a basketball conference.
Yep.
So they'll start looking at either the Big 12 with Kansas and some others, or the Big 10, who had already talked about North Carolina and Duke. It's just such a mess. But I think we're going to end up with some sort of super league.
Yeah.
And then, the others. One of the things that I think will be interesting there is, the consolidation will happen. Yeah. Will we still call it the SEC? Is it really going to be the Southeastern Conference if they have Stanford?
Right.
The name has some historical value. The other thing I think will happen, I think this will be the first thing that happens, and there's multiple lawsuits already in place. One of the hallmarks of college and why the NFL loves college, it's functionally its minor leagues, is that it has a 4-year eligibility limit. You only get to play college football for 4 years. There's loopholes if you get injured. They had an extra COVID year, which, what it comes down to is, if you remember Stetson Bennett, who was the 2-time national collegiate champion when he was at Georgia, he got drafted in like the 7th round. He blew out in Los Angeles. That guy could have played college football forever. And there's a couple places where teams are saying, hey, if I'm a student or better, an employee of the college, why can't I play for 6 years, 7 years, 8 years? First, you'll kill the the XFL or UFL, I think it is.
Yep.
but it will be better for college football. You'll have recognizable lifetime guys. I mean, Arch Manning could play at Texas forever, maybe.
Right. And you say, why wouldn't he take the NFL money? The answer is he'll have his NIL money from payments from
Texas. It's going to be the secondary guys.
Yeah.
You know, the number one picks, the number two picks, they're going to go. They're going to take the NFL money every time.
That's
but those
the
guys
CFL,
that don't make
right,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys that don't make it or those guys who are fringy. If you think about, gosh, I'm trying to think of a guy who was really good in college. Vinny Testaverde. Well, he had a pretty good NFL career. You get some of those guys, T. Martin, who had really good college careers. Why does it have to end when they're a senior? If they're employees, I don't think it will.
Right. Yeah, it's going to change everything. If I had to put a pin in this, is we're kind of off track, but I'm enjoying this. So throw a dart. I'm going to throw a dart at what's going to happen in the next 10 years. My guess is, there will be a Super League. A lot of the teams that are currently in the SEC and the Big Ten are going to fall out of it, or there will be some sort of two-tier, essentially relegation thing. But failing that, they're going to fall out of it because nobody wants Vanderbilt, right? Nobody wants Vanderbilt. Yeah. And nobody wants Northwestern. I'm sorry. But there are some truths there that the weaker ones are going to fall out because it's more money for the stronger ones. And my guess is that will probably end up being a unified organization that will, not, like the AFC and the NFC, nod to the AFL-NFL merger, even now, 60 years later, that there will be some sort of conference set up within the Super League where there's a Southeast Conference and there's a big conference. And I'm just going to float this out there. I bet the intellectual property rights for a Pacific Conference might be available cheap. So you put that together and you create a little Super League of whatever, 32 teams. And everybody else, like my Cal Bears, just kind of goes back to being college football like it used to be, without a lot of money and without a lot of spotlight, and the other NFL happens on Saturdays. But I don't know, it's a real mystery, and there's a long time. It's actually, we're talking as that the new college football video game is coming out, and that's another sign of the times.
It's huge
because it wasn't available for a long time because of licensing issues, and now it is. So last segment is the future. You and I have had some exchanges about the Vision Pro, about the future of live sports in general and TV sports in general. I know you are interested in tech stuff. Obviously, that's what I do for my other part of my job. The moments of sports in immersive video in the Vision Pro are amazing.
Yep.
And I have some issues with the fact that Apple seems to have come out with this product without a good content strategy, and there's almost no content for it, which is super frustrating.
That's the problem.
But those sports moments, that moment where there's an errant throw wide at first base and you're in the photographer well at Fenway Park that was in their original sizzle reel, is breathtaking. The dunks in the NBA, the Steph Curry three-pointer at the All-Star game, the goals in the MLS Cup, it's hard not to look at that and think, I have seen something about the future of TV. I don't know what yet, but something. What do you think?
Well, the interesting thing to me is that, first, what the hell is the content strategy? I thought it was going to be like Apple TV was at first, where there were a bunch of shows. There wasn't a whole lot of back catalog because, hey, we just started. We didn't go out and buy a bunch of, you know, old Seinfeld episodes for you to watch. So they just had a few things and it would build up. It's dripping out so slowly that I can't even figure out why. We know they shot shark video and balloon video and you know, they had that baseball thing. We even figured out which
the
game it
was. Super Bowl. They shot the Super Bowl and we've only seen like 2 seconds of clips from it.
Yeah, so I don't know what they're doing with that. But the company they bought, NextVR, actually started out, this is back on Oculus. And I had it wasn't the original Oculus, but it was pretty close. It was bad video. But at the time, amazing.
Right.
And NextVR had a thing where they basically just sat a camera courtside at a Lakers game. And, you know, you would watch. there goes. Yeah, it wasn't LeBron James at the time, but you know, you'd watch, God, I think it was Kobe Bryant, running back and forth, and it was just like you were sitting there. If you've ever had the chance to sit courtside in an NBA game, it's completely different because it's so much faster, it's so much higher, it's so much louder. And this was just like that. And then they had the brilliant idea, and it turns out it was accidental. There was one game where Jonah Hill was sitting next to the camera. So he just talked to the camera like it was his buddy. Did you see that? And you could turn your head and kind of see him. And it was like, oh, I'm watching a game with Jonah Hill. But it was all you have to do. Here's your content strategy, Apple. All you have to do is stick one of those cameras in a seat.
Yeah.
And I will pay you money for it.
Yeah.
I will buy a ticket. Now, I'm not going to pay, you know, the courtside because I can't.
It's not a writer. Right, it's unlimited numbers of tickets courtside that they can sell, which exactly. They can't do for physical courtside.
Exactly. Suddenly you have the infinite stadium.
Yeah.
And if you, let's say you were doing a Giants game, you put one, you know, right behind the dugout. Boom. There, that's $10 a game. Or you've only got $5. Well, you're going to sit in the upper deck. But that's a good experience. I might pay $5 rather than 10 just because, hey, I like sitting up higher so I can see more things going on rather than being right behind and watching more of the pitcher and batter. I think, you know, for any sport, especially the NBA, this is where it should be, is give me an infinite stadium. Give me the opportunity to be there. And why Apple hasn't done this, especially in soccer.
Right.
It has to be. I mean, you tell me, is it a bandwidth issue? Is it an editing issue? You know, at WWDC, they talked about, you know, they showed the camera that they're developing. Right. They showed that we'll be able to do it in Final Cut. I see that even QuickTime Player now has a spatial video thing, and I don't even have the new beta. So it's one of those things where I just don't get. This is the first time I've ever thought Apple was doing something dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. I admit to being mystified. And we know also, like, tech and sports is fascinating because a lot of tech people don't care about sports, but we know, I've talked to him. We know Eddie Q, senior vice president at Apple in charge of services, loves sports. When I talked to him, he literally had just gotten back from the Super Bowl and was telling me stories that I can't repeat. Like, it's amazing. So, yes, it is a little bit mystifying. I have to assume that something is a holdup here, right? The fact that the MLS Cup highlights, which were badly done, and I think actually a great learning experience, taught me what's wrong with a conventional highlights editing package for an immersive sports event. Because every time they cut the camera, you don't know where you're looking and you're disoriented, which doesn't happen in TV editing. So you have to have a very different approach. You need to have much longer or have the user decide when they're going to look somewhere else. It needs to be rethought. But that was the MLS Cup, and they couldn't even get it out before the next season started.
Yeah.
It was like weeks after. So I wonder what the holdup is. And I do wonder whether some of it is technical. We've been talking about live streaming. Like, they can't even get the content out. I would love. So what I've talked to my friends in the tech industry about who do care about sports, people like John Gruber, is the old Howard Cosell Monday Night Football NFL Films highlights, which you, when you were a kid back in the 70s and 80s, there was no ESPN highlight package. There was no Chris Berman and Tom Jackson NFL primetime. If you wanted to see highlights of anything that happened at any other NFL game, they shipped all of the film by air back to NFL Films, cut these highlight packages, and then Howard Cosell narrated them. It was amazing. And I thought, well, do that. Like, start with that. Start with a taster of the MLS, or if there's an all-star game or a special thing, do one as a test and put it out there. And maybe Apple, one of their personality traits is they don't like testing things in public. They like to have the magic just come out of the black box and be amazing. And so maybe they feel like they don't want to learn in public. I would argue Vision Pro is a product where they're learning in public. They should just try it and see.
Yeah.
But I share your opinion that sports kind of needs to be live, but I'm also surprised we haven't seen a concert that's immersive. We haven't seen a theater performance that's immersive. There, we haven't seen like a speech or a, like, there are so many immersive live events you could do that don't require the streaming part of it. But the sports thing, I agree with you. It's a game changer. And not only it's not necessarily going to be for everybody, but we talk about paying $1,000 to get all the NFL games. People will pay $3,500 for a headset and some fee to sit courtside in an NBA game. They will. Absolutely. Because they do. They pay thousands of dollars just for the single experience of doing it once.
And no offense to John, but people paid for an app to see John talk to, you know,
Apple executives.
The Apple executives. And it was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
Right. And that was non-immersive 3D. Yeah.
If John can do it, why can't Apple?
Right. I don't know whether it's tech limitations or money or whether it is this sort of strange pride thing where they if they're going to do it, they want to do it right. And so they're not going to do it, which I think is exactly the wrong approach for Vision Pro right now. But I mean, who knows? They've got other opportunities with MLS. I do feel like MLS is probably the test bed, although that clip from Fenway Park makes me wonder if they might try to do something with Major League Baseball with their Friday night package. That's another opportunity for them to experiment is what would a, yeah. Could we do a from the dugout roof, from the photography well? It's also possible that they've done that and said, you know what? Nobody wants to sit in one spot for the whole game. So now we need multiple and we need an interface that lets you switch between cameras and it's more complicated. And I'll take that as an answer, but I think
it's the wrong answer.
I feel it's unsettled and unnerving that they have not made more of a claim, struck their claim here, because I think there's something here and they should be experimenting with it.
I think they should just be as simple as humanly possible. You say they don't want to sit in one seat. Well, that's pretty much just what people do at games.
Yes.
You know,
I don't move around.
I can still get up and go to the concession stand, sure. i.e. my refrigerator. I can still go up and go to the restroom and come back. And I won't pause as you would with a movie. But I think the idea that I can't just go to a game, if it were a TV company, if this were, Warner Brothers talking about it, I would say they wouldn't want to do this because you still have to have the truck, but do you have the announcers? Do you have the value add? Do you have all the other things? If I just show up to the ballpark and at 7:05 is first pitch and I'm watching and I don't have an announcer other than, the ambient.
Right.
I take my money, Apple. Please.
Well, I mean, you can hear the PA. So you're there. This is the thing that Ben Thompson talked about NBA courtside in Vision Pro. He's like, you don't need to do anything because the music is playing. If you want to know the score, you know what? You look at the scoreboard because that's what you do when you're there. You don't need graphics. You need so little. And if you want to do an overlay, if you want to let your Apple TV announcers optionally be played, like you got a transistor radio in your ear or the local radio announcers or whatever, great, you can do that because I can do that. I occasionally will take a radio to a Giants game and my wife and I'll share the earbuds and it's kind of fun to do it. We don't always do it, but sometimes we do. Make it an option, but get started, because I do think it will blow people away. I really do believe it will blow people away.
Agree. So, 100%.
And I do think that in the long run, there will be something like this that will be a bigger part of sports, because the live experience of attending a sporting event is different than watching it on TV. It's not necessarily better, right? Like, I have definitely, I've been to soccer games, I've been to football games, and baseball games where the experience is totally different. And I can't, from my chosen, upper deck box seat at a Giants game, I can't tell if it's a strike or not. I don't know whether it was a four-seam fastball or a slider. I don't know any of that because I'm very far away. And I love it when the umpire calls it a strike and everybody boos. It's like, oh yeah, you guys have a much better view than the guy who's down there does about that. But it's not worse. It's just different. It's just different. And people pay for it. So why not let people experience it?
I think with the Vision app for MLB, you've got the option to just basically watch a big TV. Awesome. Yeah. Supposedly, you'll be able to watch multiple streams. That'll be great.
Yeah.
Especially in basketball, or especially in college basketball during a tournament. but you've also got that 3D thing. It's not fully baked yet, but I can switch back and forth. If you give me a third option where I'm just sitting in a seat and paying you extra money, again, take my money out.
Yeah. And if you really feel like, I also wanted a data overlay or something, right? Like, there's nothing stopping you from having a giant floating standard broadcast in the sky that you can also look at for the instant replays instead of the watching on the screen. There's lots of things they could do, but I take your point, which is they could start with nothing and it would still be interesting.
Camera on a stick.
Yep. That's it. Immersive camera on a stick. Let's do it. Will, this has been amazing. Tell people where they can find you normally on the internet.
You can find me at undertheknife.substack.com, where I write about baseball injuries. And other than that, you can find me on whatever we're calling Twitter this week, where I am at Injury Expert.
Excellent. Excellent. Again, if you have questions for the podcast, downstreamfeedback.com. If you're not a Downstream Plus subscriber, this is the end of the show. And in the Plus version of the show, we discussed even more things about the NFL and the NBA and much more. So please consider subscribing downstream.plus to get full versions of every episode, access to our awesome Relay FM Discord, bonus shows from Relay, and a whole lot more. You can find me at sixcolors.com, and I appear on many other podcasts here at Relay FM and the incomparable.com. And again, undertheknife.substack.com for the writing baseball injuries, yes, and other stuff of Will Carroll, an injury expert on x.com/Twitter. We will be back. This episode is dropping a little early because I'm about to go on a trip. So I'm going to drop this early in case amazing things happen with the NBA TV negotiations after we record this, or Apple suddenly announces a grand plan to have the League Cup entirely be immersive or something like that. Probably not, though. Anyway, famous last words. This show will be back August 8th, which is back to our normal time slot. So this is a little early. There'll be a little longer gap. And then we'll be back August 8th with a full episode for everyone. Until then, thank you for listening to Downstream. We'll see you next time.